We could all feel some nasty side effects from the spiraling unrest in Libya.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good day to you. I'm Bob Moon, and this is the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's President's Day, Monday, February 21st. Steve Chiotakis and Jeremy Hobson will be back tomorrow. Coming up, unrest in the Middle East has the price of oil surging. Can the U.S. government simply shut off the Internet? And what do you call more than one Toyota Prius? You'll find out. Markets are closed today due to the holiday. Little wonder the eyes of investors the world over are on Libya this morning. It's the fourth largest producer of crude oil, and the future of those supplies is in doubt as the uprising sweeping that North African nation grows increasingly violent. BP has announced it's very likely to evacuate its employees from there. And all that is weighing on the price of crude oil. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us to explain. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Bob.
You know, oil didn't really tick up all that much as Egypt was in revolution, even on the day that Egypt's president resigned. Why such a big spike today?
Well, because Libya is the first fairly big oil-producing country to be hit by really severe unrest. It's producing probably around 2 million barrels a day. Now, as we've just heard, most of that goes to Europe. But if the Libyan supply is interrupted, the Europeans would have to buy from the world market, and that could push up the global price quite significantly. There's a rule of thumb in the oil market here. If you lose a million barrels a day, that's going to put the price of crude up by $10 a barrel. So if the Libyan supply dried up, that could add $20 a barrel.
Now, it seems every day a new country in the region is facing revolution. There must be other countries that could worry the markets too, yes?
Yes. Algeria's the next big worry. It's producing around 1.5 million barrels a day. Combined with Libya, that could add up to a potential loss of 3.5 million barrels.
You got me nervous here. Keep going, though. What's the nightmare scenario?
Saudi Arabia, without any doubt, it produces 10% of the world's supply. If that were interrupted, and there is a possibility, a remote possibility, but there is a possibility of that, that could cause a stratospheric increase in the price of oil.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Bob.
More now on the situation from North Africa to the Middle East. From Cairo, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports on Libya's economic importance to the region and to the U.S.
On a street leading to the now famous Tahrir Square, Egyptians are still chanting for freedom, and now also for Libya's. The big difference between Egypt and Libya, though, oil. Libya produces 2% of the world's supply. Speaking to the BBC, London oil analyst Nick McGregor laid out the potential impact.
Very little Libyan oil actually found its way directly to the US. Libya is far more a key supplier to European markets. For him, it's the single largest supplier of oil and a considerable gas supplier.
The U.S. only started trading and investing with Libya in 2008, after more than a decade of sanctions. And even though Libya has so much oil wealth, the profits only go to a small elite. There's 30% unemployment, even more among young people. That's a combustible mix like in other oil-rich nations that are rumbling with revolution. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, February 21st. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. When the government of Hosni Mubarak ordered internet service providers to turn off Egyptian web access, the U.S. objected. But what if the Internet itself was under attack? Should the U.S. government have the authority and ability to turn off the Internet to save it? From Washington, John Dimsdale reports Congress has taken up the question of an Internet kill switch.
The 1934 Telecommunications Act allows the president to take over any lines of communication in a national emergency. Now, a group of senators wants to limit the president's authority. They've added language to a cybersecurity bill so no one in the government can turn the Internet off. The bill limits government intervention even when the Internet is under cyber attack. For example, the president would have to identify financial risks higher than $25 billion before the government could step in. Mark Rotenberg with the Electronic Privacy Information Center says the president should also consider the collateral damage to the economy if any part of the Internet were turned off.
the associated costs for all the businesses and users and government agencies and everyone else who's dependent on the internet would just be enormous, particularly in the United States.
Rotenberg isn't even sure a kill switch is possible here. Egypt, he notes, has 4 internet service providers. The U.S. has nearly 4,000. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Don't forget, you can get the latest look at the markets by checking out the numbers section at marketplace.org. Wall Street capped last week with some new ideas from a government panel aimed at lessening the risk of another flash crash like the one last May 6th. There's a newly emerging question now that electronic trading is driving more exchanges to merge and become more interconnected. Will they get the technology right? Here's our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore.
Stock exchanges run on technology 24 hours a day, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily good at it. Consider this. The New York Stock Exchange merged with Paris's Euronext 4 years ago. They're still trying to get their computers to speak the same language. More mergers mean another bumpy ride, but not necessarily another flash crash, says Jamie Selway, an expert on trading systems for ITG.
I look at the flash crash, it didn't have anything to do with exchange systems per se.
Vlad Kondros, head of corporate strategy at trading firm LiquidNet, agrees. He says stock exchange mergers won't increase the chance of flash crashes.
The flash crash, one of the biggest problems was that the rules were inconsistent.
He means that each stock exchange has its own policies. One exchange can see a stock dropping too fast and hit a switch to stop it from trading, but it can keep trading elsewhere. That's a problem for regulators and stock exchange officials to fix. So getting the computers talking to each other may be the easy part. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Lots of finger-pointing on the Sunday talk shows, Republicans and Democrats blaming each other for a looming spending impasse. Meantime, both sides have put their long-term spending ideas on the table. So let's check in with Fortune magazine editor-at-large Alan Sloan to see whether these plans live up or maybe down to expectations. Good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning, Bob.
First, let's talk about the budget. There's been a lot said about both proposed budgets, those from the Republicans and President Obama's budget offering. What's your take on the tension in Washington?
I am completely bored. I mean, you hear all this noise from the Obama people, you hear all this noise from the Republicans, and you look and there's almost nothing of any substance. And the idea that I should spend my time obsessing over this is just silly. I'm going to go wait for spring training and hope Mariano Rivera holds up.
Well, what about these plans? Would either of these plans even solve the deficit?
Neither one would come close, and it's hard to believe either one is serious. Because the Obama thing pretends to be cutting spending but really isn't, and the Republican thing, as best I can tell, consists of, well, let's get rid of things like Pell Grants that help lower-income people go to school, but let's not really deal with defense or entitlements or anything. It's just, at this point, nonsensical.
Well, let's talk about entitlements. What do you think would help solve the deficit problem?
Among other things, raising taxes, though we're not supposed to say that. Trimming some of the entitlements, dealing with the Pentagon, the one thing I would actually deal with differently than most is Social Security.
Social Security. It's come up a lot in these debates, I understand. What's the problem with Social Security? Can it be fixed?
Sure, Social Security can be fixed, but Social Security is not a budget problem. Social Security on the books is showing a surplus. In reality, it's starting to run a serious cash deficit, but it's not a budget problem. It's a cash problem. The other things, Medicare and Medicaid, are both budget and cash problems. Social Security is different and not as messy or as complicated as the other two, but who knows what they'll do there.
Alan Sloan is senior editor-at-large at Fortune magazine, a title that lets him have one foot in the political arena and one foot in the business arena. Thanks, Alan.
You're welcome, Bob.
There's an old saying that justice is blind and apparently hungry. In Lake County, Indiana, court officials are cutting the lunch budget for jurors. Chief Superior Court Judge John Pera says he's frustrated and embarrassed, but has no choice given recent budget cuts. So here's a case where it really is true. There is no free lunch.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, February 21st. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. When you hear the words Internet Dating Conference, you might expect to find folks who specialize in finding love. Well, in this case, we're talking attendees who are experts at finding customers, as reporter Karen Burkett tells us from WLRN in Miami.
The online dating industry is a lucrative one. Revenue has been flat in recent years, but the industry still generates over $1 billion annually in the U.S. Attendees of the iDate 2011 conference included entrepreneurs, programmers, sales reps. These experts are involved in millions of people's love lives.
What does your company know about love?
What do we know about love? We're behind the scenes. We're a back office solution.
The matches made at this conference are about the business side of internet dating. A programmer might find that one true investor. If things work out, a company will be launched. David Evans writes an industry blog called Online Dating Insider.
They will put that site up on the internet much faster than it took to start one, say, even 5 or 10 years ago.
A number of other companies that have nothing to do with romance were here to woo clients. Iovation is a small firm that provides security for 22 dating websites, blocking identity thieves, spammers, and online predators. Royal Caribbean is trying to sell singles and couples cruises. Google wants dating websites to advertise with them and not their main competitor.
Well, Google is scared right now because they're seeing a lot of their advertising revenue going over to Facebook.
Paul Carrick-Brunson was a conference panelist. With all the talk of deals, he wonders if industry growth is flat because online dating isn't giving customers what their hearts desire.
I think that a challenge that this industry faces is that it is a love industry. And I just wonder how many of us are in it for the love, right, and the connection versus the bottom line.
In this industry, it seems there ain't no romance without finance. From Miami Beach, I'm Karen Burkett for Marketplace.
You might have seen Toyota's promotion for the past month or so. The carmaker has been conducting an online poll on what the plural for its Prius hybrid should be. They even got actor studio interviewer James Lipton to check, supposedly, with William Shakespeare.
The word Prius proves elusive. What is the plural of Prius?
Well, sounds Latin. Carpe diem. Carpe diem, which fortunately rhymes with Priam. You're right. Go with that. Priam.
Priam.
Priam, yeah. Final answer.
Well, Priam did get 13% of the vote, but Priuses got 20%, while 24% thought Prius should be used for both singular and plural. The plurality has spoken, though, and 25% decided more than one Prius should be Prii, like, you know, cactus and cacti. Toyota promises it will use Prii for the plural in its ads from now on. Aren't you glad they solved that one? I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.